E.T. Phone Home.
I'm just having some brewski beers at my Mojo Dojo Casa house.
Wendy, I'm home.
There's no place like home.
Welcome to the House of Cinema podcast. I am your host, Joe Aragon. With me, as always, Clara Curtis. And in the house today, a discussion on Paul King's Wonka, the latest installment in a new franchise, question mark? Who knows? Will we get more of Willy Wonka? We'll discuss that later in the episode. But before we start, Clara, how are you? How are things?
Things are good. It's almost the holidays, which is exciting for everyone else, but I'm
stressful.
I'm just a bit of a Scrooge. Oh, I'm not okay. Much of a holiday person, so I'm a little bit like
a little Slugworth, huh?
No,
are you a Slugworth?
No, I wouldn't cast my niece into a laundromat for life. I don't think I would do that to my niece.
Fair enough.
Spoiler for Wonka 30 seconds into our episode.
I mean, I'm assuming if you're listening to this, our discussion on Wonka, you've seen the movie, but if you haven't seen the movie, from this point on, there will be spoilers discussion. So if you want to pause and come back, you can. If not, spoiler alert. But anyways, you would not cast your niece down a laundry chute and sentence them a life with the terrible, terrible people.
No, I wouldn't do that. So I'm not that level of bah humbug, I guess. But yeah, holidays are happening. I think I'm getting a little bit sick again. My full confession is the room I'm recording in. Usually I like sit in a chair, but I am sitting on the floor because it just feels better right now.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm on the floor. Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing well. You know, I am also recovering from a mild sickness. I had a busy couple weeks going to see some movies. I've seen Wonka. I've seen Poor Things. I've seen Iron Claw. December is just like kicking it into high gear.
Yeah.
It's a lot. You know, we can't cover every single movie. I think what we'll end up doing is doing a recap and talking about a few movies we missed. But
fun.
Wonka is the movie we did want to talk about this week. It obviously came out this past Friday. Very popular. People were excited. I'm curious to know how you felt going into Wonka, because you and I are talking about the original Willy Wonka, the 1971 version, on the Patreon side. Did that get you more excited to watch this Wonka? Were you excited to watch this version of Wonka?
I think I was feeling very lukewarm. I don't think it was really leaning one way or the other. I honestly kind of surprised myself by going. I wound up double featuring it. I was at the theater already for Wish, and then
you saw Wish as well?
I watched Wish. I saw it. Moving on. And
we don't want to talk about all the Wish lore.
No.
What about the goat? He starts Zootopia. Isn't that so cool, Clara?
It's so great, and it's so funny how the goat's voice is low, but it's a baby. I laughed my ass off. LMAO. I laughed so much.
Have you heard the acronym EJBL?
I hadn't until you used it. In that tweet about someone wanting me to play Fortnite, you replied to that with that, and I was like, what the fuck are you saying? And I had to Google it because I was I don't understand what you're saying right now, but now it makes sense. I get it. It's good.
So you were not each bowling during Wish, huh?
No, unfortunately not. I did cry because I'm me.
Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
I mean, it got me, but yeah, I watched Wish, and then I came out of Wish, and I was like, I'm going to watch Wonka. It's starting right now. And so then I bought another ticket, and I bought a little bag of popcorn, and the girl at concessions gave me a weird look, because she was like, didn't I just see you an hour and a half ago? And then I gave my ticket to the guy ripping tickets, and he did the same thing. He was like, oh, hi. And I was like, hello. And then I went in and I watched Wonka.
Okay. But so to come back to my question, though.
That's true. Yeah.
You like the 1971 version.
I love it. You it's love it. It's so good.
Did that at any point, like, get you a little bit excited for this Wonka? And if not, why not?
I don't think so. And I think it's because I think in my heart of hearts, I'm very much a Wonka's the kind of character that I think works better with as little backstory as possible. I think it's interesting to see him as a figure who, like, is very much in the moment of whatever narrative he's a part of. And uh-huh. I almost don't want to know his motivations or, like, what drives him in a way, because it makes the way he acts more interesting and, like, more nuanced in a way. Oh. You know, like, backstory is helpful for sure. It's an essential part of character development on any scale. But I do think with his character specifically, like, he very much is more meant to be as, like, a guide to the children in, like, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and, like, to kind of, like, present to them their faults and, like, have them be addressed in his fucked up little way. So it's like, I don't know. Yeah, I've always just been like, I don't need to know Wonka's whole backstory. So I think it was one of those things where it's like, I'll give it a go because I like Paul King. I love his movies. So it's like, I was willing to give Wonka a try, but it wasn't something that I was like chomping at the bit about. I'm not Club Chalamet on Twitter. That's not me.
They're not the secret person behind Club Chalamet. Actually, that person's not secret anymore. Everybody knows who it is.
Yeah, everyone does know who that is. Yeah, that's not me. I'm not collabing with them. But yeah, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I didn't like go into it being like, this is gonna suck ass. Like, I was just like, yeah, we'll give it a try. Who knows? It could be fun. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm looking for a fun time.
Okay, fair enough.
So that was how I was. How are you feeling? I feel like you were maybe a little more excited than me.
I was more excited than you for two reasons. One, I do love the 1971 like you. I'm a big fan of it, and I'm excited to talk about mm-hmm. that this week with you on the podcast. And I also trust Paul King tremendously. I mean, we're both mm-hmm. big Paddington fans. Clearly, yes. We're big Paddington 2 fans. And yes. I was like fairly confident that going into this, I was going to at the bare minimum enjoy it and like it.
Okay, yeah.
I was not somebody who was like completely blindsided by the musical portion. Mm-hmm. Were you somebody who was?
No, because we've talked about it so much. I think it was, I think it was during our, God, what was that? Probably during our Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes episode, we were talking about trailers at the end. And I was like, the uh-huh. Wonka trailer, you asked me if the Wonka trailer played maybe or something. And I was just like, is that a musical? It seems like it might be a musical. And you were like, I think it's definitely a musical. And so I was like, Joe knows better than me. So I went in knowing it was a musical. But I will say, despite me knowing that, the fact that the very first words in this movie are being sung, I was floored. I was like, oh, it's a musical. Like, I knew it was.
It's a musical musical.
It's a musical musical. I was like, oh, wow. Okay, we're strapping in. So I appreciate that they ripped the Band-Aid off so hard.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they really threw you into that.
So the conversation around this kind of whole movies hiding the fact that they're musicals has been mm-hmm. erupting lately, not just because of Wonka, but because of a lot of movies in like the past couple months that are coming out yeah. and that have come out. And there was an article that Deadline posted just like 3 days ago before this recording that studios have confirmed they're intentionally hiding the fact that the movie's musical because they know general populace and normal audiences are not fond of them and will likely not go to a movie if it's a musical. I don't want to get distracted with that conversation too much on the, I don't know if it's like a question of ethics, like that's just like marketing strategy and campaigning. Like,
right.
Is it surprising to you people don't like musicals? I feel like that's not that big of a revelation to me.
It's not surprising, but I think the fact that studios feed into that mentality is a little disappointing because I feel like if anyone's gonna like ride or die for a movie, it's the theater kids. Like, yeah. why would you not be appealing to the theater people? The theater people are so enthusiastic and such a cool group of people, and like, I feel like musical theater as a whole is like such a crucial part of like the American arts. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's such a big thing, and like, it is really odd, this like transition, especially honestly kind of in the wake of like something like Hamilton. Yeah. Like blew everyone out of the water. It's all anyone talked about for like a good year, I would argue, and like, so clearly it was a success and people enjoyed it and were watching it and talking about it, and so it is interesting to see something like that come out a few years ago and then the response be to really double down on like, no, we can't let people know it's a musical. I think it's weird. I don't know if I like it.
It is overall really weird, and especially because I think your Hamilton example is a really good callback to something that was a phenomenon, to say the least. I mean, yeah. I had never seen Hamilton, but I would take an Uber somewhere, and the Hamilton soundtrack would be playing. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, I don't know what this is. I would go to karaoke, and people were singing Hamilton. People really? Loved Hamilton. Yeah. And I do find it interesting that movie studios are trying to hide the fact that it's a musical when you could, you know, market towards that group instead of hiding it. You know, you can't you can't win them all. You can't win everybody over is kind of like my ultimate, like, do they not realize like you're not going to satisfy everybody?
Yeah.
And I'm really curious how like Joker 2 is going to be marketed, a movie that's been confirmed a musical. And a movie I've talked about a little bit online, like via TikTok and Twitter, and a lot of comments are like, Joker 2 is a musical, hard pass, or Joker 2 is a musical. That's weird. I'm kind of curious now.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll tell people it's a musical? I feel like they're going to do exactly what they've done with Wonka, with Mean Girls. They're going to hide it.
I think they're going to hide it too. I mean, especially with like something like The Color Purple coming out this month too, where like, I mean, they're literally like, the cast is from the musical version of The Color Purple, and then they're coming to the screen with it and they're still hiding the fact in their marketing that it's a musical. It's like, if that's happening with something like The Color Purple, like, I feel like it's absolutely going to happen with Joker 2, which is going to be so bizarre, especially with like, I mean, they have Lady Gaga in it. Like,
I know.
Why would you not use Lady Gaga to her full effect?
It's a good question. The funny thing about The Color Purple trailer is that like, they are hiding it's a musical, but not as intensely as something like Mean Girls.
That's
like in
super
The Color
true.
Purple trailer, they get to like, they show scenes where they're about to sing, they cut away real quick.
Yeah.
Or they like show somebody like singing, but the soundtrack is playing over it, so you can't hear them singing.
Right.
I feel like a movie like Mean Girls, they're intentionally like avoiding any dancing, any hints of singing, they're avoiding it.
Yeah.
And it is going to be interesting, the amount of people who go into this thinking it's not a musical. I saw a TikTok before we started today. They had like over at least 2 million views. It was really high up.
Oh, wow.
Probably higher, much higher than that. But the TikTok was when Wonka ends and you didn't realize it was a full-blown musical. And it was like these, like, you know, people in the theater kind of like staring in disbelief. And I'm so curious if there's going to be a lot of people who go into this movie like flabbergasted that it's a full-blown musical. Like, what would you say, like, percentage-wise?
Ooh, I feel like it's got to be high. I'd say probably like 75% of people are not going to fully grasp.
No,
you don't think? You don't think? I don't know.
But like, the both previous Willy Wonka movies have been musicals.
This is very true. But like, I mean, I rewatched the Tim Burton one this past weekend just because I was like, well, we're talking about two out of the three. I might as well watch the other one too. And like, that does have musical elements, but it's so limited. Like, it's just the Oompa Loompa singing. So it's like, it feels very different than the original, where like there's the integration of songs from like a wide like number of the cast. Like, it really is just the Oompa Loompas and Tim Burton's. So I wonder, I don't know. I feel like it is still a pretty big surprise. I think also because it's like, I don't know. I think maybe people aren't expecting the specific cast of people as like singers. Like, I don't think that's
true.
An association going on.
Well, yeah, Chalamet doesn't really scream like musical theater singing. I mean, if you know anything about his history, people may, but like on the mainstream, yeah, you don't really associate him with like singing.
No, the only thing I really think about are like in terms of singing for him are like that one video from when he was in high school that always goes around.
Yeah, where, I was thinking about that.
Where he's on the stage, and then also that skit he does for SNL with, I think it's Pete Davidson.
With Pete Davidson, exactly.
Yeah, with like skeet.
Yeah.
That.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens when people, I kind of hope people respond to the Spotify. I'll put in the Spotify questions like, did you expect to be musical? See if people can give us kind of insight in what they thought.
Yeah, I would love that.
If musical isn't a draw to this movie, why are people going to be drawn to Wonka this past weekend? Why are people going, you think?
I think it's like a twofold. I think it's Chalamet, of course, for a lot of like the older crowd. Not old. I mean, just not the kid crowd, you know? But I think also like this is a really, like honestly, it is like a really good family movie. I think, I think people are enthusiastic about that, especially right around the holidays. And I think I'm trying to like, has there been any other like proper like family movie that's live action that's been in theaters? Obviously, there's been a good handful of animation, but like, I don't know if there's been any like
the
live action.
The keyword there was definitely live action.
Live action, yeah. I was thinking about it all morning today.
Not in theaters. Streaming is providing lot of that.
Yeah.
And that's probably why so many of these like live action family movies don't do well.
Yeah.
But live action wise, you're right. In theaters right now, I can pull up what's in theater. What's playing in theaters right now?
Poor Things.
Here's what's playing right now. Poor Things. I saw that last night.
Not for kids.
No. Wish is animated. Trolls animated. Ferrari. Mm-hmm. No.
Mm-hmm.
Hunger Games. Not for kids. Mm-hmm. Godzilla. Not for kids. Napoleon, not for kids. Silent Night's not for kids. Thanksgiving, Maestro, The Holdovers, Saltburn, none of those are for kids.
Yeah.
Dream Scenario, not for kids.
Boy
like,
and the Heron
nothing.
Is...
Boy and the Heron, yeah. But again, we're just animated.
Yeah.
I mean, if you even look back at like just the past 3 months, like what live action family movies have there been released?
The Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, yeah, that was back in July.
Oh, what? I keep forgetting that.
That was
3 months ago.
That was in July, but that did come out, and like even that's a little scary. But it's still that was definitely a family movie. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm looking at November releases. So far I have not found one.
Yeah, I don't think.
The Marvels, but even then, like the Marvels is like, you know, there was a really good article by Matt Singer about
I love the
lack of family movies, like
yes!
literally family movies. Like
yes!
I know you can take your kids to the Marvels, but like not young kids will like it. Like you have to understand that like 5-6 year olds, they're not going to be fans of the Marvels. Not all of them.
No,
like we're talking purely kids movies like Paw Patrol. Mm-hmm. Like those don't really come out anymore.
I love that you brought him up because I've really enjoyed his writing over the past couple years where like he's really kind of integrated in the fact that he is a father to young kids into the way he's writing about certain films. Like he has a really good review of Paw Patrol where he like interviews his daughter about it.
Yes,
of, like,
I read that one as well.
God, I love it. He has such great stuff, but I do vividly remember reading his article about like not being able to bring his kids to the movies anymore, really. And like that's really stuck with me. And like I do find myself thinking about that often, like when I'm looking at like a new release slate, being like, what could a kid go to on here? Not much.
Yeah. I'm just like quickly browsing through November. Nothing in November is suitable for kids. Live action. I'm focusing just on live action.
Yeah.
October. Again, The Exorcist, Flower Moon, When Evil Lurks, Royal Hotel, Pet Sematary. That was streaming. I just like nothing here is meant for kids. And I think that is probably why Wonka is drawing so many people. And I can say as a personal anecdote, when I went to see the movie, in front of me was this really sweet older like grandparents.
Oh yeah,
they brought their two granddaughters and they walked in, sat right in front of us, and they were really excited. Like the two, I mean, they were a little upset in the beginning because the movie didn't start on time.
I knew you were gonna bring that up.
This is a true story. I want everybody to know.
I know.
At a Regal Theater, start time 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Trailers didn't start till 7:15, and then the movie didn't start till like 7:30-ish. But the two grandparents were getting visibly frustrated. And even one of the little girls was like, "When's the movie starting?"
Aww.
But regardless, when the movie did end, the house lights went on. They were excited. They were pumped.
Yeah.
Like the grandfather leaned over, was like, "Did you like it?" And she was like, "Yeah." Like aww. They were really excited. And I think that's going to be a huge draw to Wonka. I agree with you completely.
I think so too. Because when I went, it was so interesting. Because what I ended up doing was my screening was like a Thursday afternoon. Like I saw it at 3:30 on Thursday. Which is like a weird time. Usually I go to those because like no one else is in them. My theater had so many people in it. Like it was crowded and it was I was like, this is cool. And it was like a lot of like families. And I was like, that's great. Like how wonderful to see this. Cause like it's been a while since I've been in. I think the last time I was in a pretty full theater with like a lot of like enthusiastic families, it was probably Elemental. So it's been like a while. So that was really nice to see.
I do think, a large part of the draw of Wonka is going to be, like you said, Chalamet. It's going to be, it's a family movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an undeniable draw because it's Willy Wonka. You know, it's a story that's been beloved for the past 50 years.
Yeah.
I want to ask you something that I find really interesting.
Okay.
From what I understand, I could be wrong. Maybe you know this, and if I'm wrong, correct me. But the Dahl family, the Roald Dahl family, has in a way not disowned the 1971, but they're not fans of it.
From what I understand, is that Roald Dahl disliked the original adaptation so much that he did properly like disavow it, and then like there's like stories about how if it was like playing on like a hotel TV or something, he'd flip the channel. Like people were saying he's never seen the whole, like he never saw the whole movie in full because he disliked it so much, which is like kind of wild, honestly. It's like,
it is wild. And that's why they were so eager to remake it with the Burton one. And they did endorse that one and worked hand in hand with Burton on that one, which is more accurate to the book, which we both have read
super
recently.
Super accurate. Yeah, I was kind of blown away. It's very accurate.
But this leads to an interesting question that I had for you, is that this movie seems to not really take the Burton one as like canon. They're clearly referencing the 71 version a lot more.
See, I was thinking of that too, because I mean, they do the Imagination song a lot, which is interesting. I think
the biggest giveaway is the Oompa Loompas.
Well, yeah, and the Oompa Loompas. But the interesting thing is that I watched Wonka and then I watched the Tim Burton one. And at the end of Wonka, when you see the whole thing where he and Lofty are like imagining what his new factory is gonna look like, and they do the whole like recreation of, you know, the room where you can eat everything, it looks a lot more like Burton's version of that than the original.
Ooh, so you think they're trying to combine both of them?
I think they are, especially like, I don't know, just like the setup of like the waterfall and just like the specific layout of things. It felt a lot more Burton version to me.
Got it.
Yeah,
it would make more sense for them to kind of combine the two to maybe satisfy, because the Dahl family is very much involved in this in this Wonka version as well, so
right.
I'm sure there needs to be some consistency. But I did find it so interesting that knowing that Dahl has disowned the 1971, I was surprised that, I mean, the Oompa Loompa is clearly a product of the 1971. It's, you know, orange, green hair. Mm-hmm. They do the same song. The Oompa Loompa song is their same cadence, same rhythm. It's from the 1971 version. And I found that really interesting. I was like, oh, like, are they not disowning it anymore? Like, or I wonder if the studios have somehow like come to an agreement with the Dahl family. Like, look, the 71 version, people fucking love that. We can't not have some type of like allusion to it, some type of homage to it.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of wondering is the case, because I'm sure it also is definitely like an intentional nod to like parents taking their kids to the theater of like, oh, you'll obviously you'll probably recognize this more than your children unless you show the movie to your kids. So I'm sure that is very much probably a little bit more studio influenced.
That's also my guess as well.
It's so hard to say, obviously, with stuff like that. It's like, who
it's
knows
hard to
what
say.
Doing.
I mean, it would be really, I think they like studios recognize like not referencing the 71 version at all would be more of a detriment to the movie.
I think like, so too.
The amount of people who would walk out and be like, wow, did they not acknowledge that one at all? Would be, there'd be a lot of disappointment, I think. People would be a little bit disappointed by that.
I think you're right. I think that probably is a part of it for sure.
Let's talk about the actual movie. I guess we've kind of been circling it for
a little bit. Yeah, we've been having fun. We're just, we're needling away at it.
Let's ask the golden question here.
Okay.
Chalamet as Wonka. Meets expectations, exceeds expectations, or...
Fails expectations?
Fails to meet expectations.
Yes, yes.
Which one are you picking here?
I feel like with me being pretty neutral, I feel like he was set up to succeed no matter what for that, because I was kind of just like, who knows? Mm-hmm. So I feel like he did better than I expected for sure. I don't know if I have a right way to like articulate what I was expecting, but I definitely was like pleasantly surprised by how good he is in it.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. How are you feeling?
I feel mostly the same way. I think that my expectations were rather low.
Oh,
it's almost impossible to not compare any version of Wonka to each other. I mean, like you're going to compare all of them together.
Absolutely.
And in my eyes, and I think in your eyes as well, the gold standard is Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
And so walking into this, you're whether it's, you know, intentionally or not, you're thinking of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you put it in that vacuum, Timothy versus Gene Wilder, it's unfair. And I'm thinking like, well, no, he doesn't live up to expectations. But overall, I think he does. I think he does a good job bringing a lot of charm and whimsy to the character.
Mm-hmm.
I said this in my review on Letterboxd, and I want to kind of iterate it again. I think there are times in this movie where Chalamet's delivery is like spot on. I'm loving him as Wonka. He's like firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Great time. There'd be other moments where like he reacts or it says like a little joke and I'm like, I don't know if I'm like buying this. Like there'll be times where he like yells out to like the applause. So he's like, ladies and gentlemen. I'm like, ooh, that isn't very dumb.
You don't like when he raises his voice.
I just don't think he like can pull off that like big extravagant, like alluring character that Willy Wonka. But there are other times like in the small intimate moments, I think he does really well. So there, I'm just kind of like, a little uneven for me. I think overall, though, I do like him as Wonka, and I think he does succeed as Wonka. I don't know if I should ask you this, because you might be the wrong person to ask.
Uh-oh. What's happening?
Well, you're not a musical person, so I don't want to ask you about the songs, but were there any songs that were particularly that you fancied, or that were, like, maybe the opposite, that you did not fancy at all?
This is gonna
Claire doesn't like musicals, everybody. This is why.
I'm not a big musical person, but it's like, it's not because I'm like, singing is stupid. It's because I get really uncomfortable having to watch people sing. I just want it in my ears and I don't want to see it them doing it. I don't know what it is. I think it's just such a vulnerable act of performance. I think it really unsettles me for some reason. I'm like, okay.
If you were to close your eyes, how were the songs for you? You think they were good, great, not great? Where were they sitting for you?
I thought they were mostly pretty good. I liked the song where he was singing about his money and then his money's going away.
Love that song too. Yes.
I think that one worked for me because it does a good job integrating the song into what's happening. And like, there's a great level of like comedic timing to
Absolutely.
And I thought that was really lovely. This is a controversial, but I don't know how much I actually like this song. It's the song that stuck with me the most.
Don't be scrub.
It is that one.
No, not scrub.
I Yeah, honestly, I think I did have fun with that. I think I had fun. I don't know.
You're not alone. You're not alone.
Okay, are you sure? Your reaction made me just think I've spat on the king or something. Like, I've done something taboo.
No, I didn't love Scrub personally, okay. But okay. I can confirm there are Scrub defenders. I was in my Letterboxd comments, and I put in my letterbox, like, I just don't want to hear Scrub again. And many of the comments were like, Scrub's the best song. Scrub's the best. Don't hate on Scrubs. You're okay. Not alone at all.
Oh, well, great. I'll join my people then. How dare you say that about...
Scrub?
Oscar-winning song, Scrub. How dare you say that?
I'm sorry. How'd you feel about the rendition of Pure Imagination?
I thought that was interesting. I think it's fine. Mm-hmm. I think the tough thing is singing is, like, there's singing where you can carry a tune, and mm-hmm. there's singing where you truly understand the art of singing and, like, the theory behind it and, like, all of the stuff that's going into something like that. And I do feel like overall Timothée Chalamet is much more maybe of a I can carry a tune. Person. I don't know if he really is, like, singing, you know what I mean?
Got it.
And so I think Pure Imagination is fine. It's sweet, and it made me very, like, nostalgic,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't, like, wow me necessarily.
I agree with you on that.
Okay.
Like, almost word for word.
Oh.
I do think that the song works, and I like, mm-hmm. I like hearing it. But in that scene, I really thought it was going to be more of an emotional punch, and I feel like I didn't get that from that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I still liked it. I still, like, it's a song that it obviously means a lot to a lot of people, including you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So hearing it was really nice, and I think they used it properly as well. I feel like I was really afraid they were going to jump the shark on it and maybe sing it too early or at the wrong moment, but I think they saved it for the right time, and I really liked that
so
a lot.
I think so, too. Yeah, so, I agree. Okay.
How do you feel about his mom? How do you feel about that kind of subplot, that storyline?
I think it's interesting to an extent. I would love to know why she didn't teach him how to read.
Yeah, that's strange.
I found that very odd because they convey her as this really wonderfully inspiring, like, compassionate mother who's, like, very invested in his life and, you know, really pours her time into caring for him. But then there, I don't know, I thought it was
book
odd
reading.
That...
Only chocolate, Willie. Only chocolate.
No, well, and it's interesting because to an extent I understand why they kind of set it up in that way, where we get kind of like a little montage of him learning how to read because, like, Roald Dahl is such an advocate for children reading.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that them including that is truthfully, like, very, like, Roald Dahl-esque. Like, in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory book, the longest Oompa Loompa song is the one they sing about Mike TV and about how children should go back to reading and, like, all of that. Like, it's a very, like, passionate song in the book. So it's, like, that is a cool way to kind of tie back into, like, probably one of his biggest moments of advocacy, which is for children to have more access to reading. But it was a little odd to me that, like, we get this really wonderful mom that he loves so much, and it's just there's so much going on, and then, like, he's just never taught how to read. Like, I don't know. And maybe that's me being, like, kind of, like, uncompassionate. I don't know. Because obviously they were in a situation, like, he talks about, like, oh, my mom had to work so hard just to make me one chocolate bar every year for my birthday and, like, all that. So it's like there's clearly a lot going on.
Hmm.
But why can't he read?
I like to think it's going to be the reason that you mentioned that they're really aiming to kind of push that theme, that message that reading is critical and important, and having the kid teach Wonka the importance of reading, and hopefully will inspire the many kids who watch this movie the importance of reading.
Yeah.
It is strange. I like their relationship. I'm a sucker for a mother-son story. Like, I'm going to eat that shit up all the time.
I had a feeling.
But I wish there was more. I was kind of shocked by how Sally Hawkins is barely in this movie. She's in it for, like, maybe two or three scenes. And she has, like, that one moment in the flashback on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of shocked by the lack of Sally Hawkins, and I thought we were going to dive more into the mother-son story. And I feel like if we would have spent more time with them too, I maybe would have bought the ending a little bit more. That being said, the ending did make me super emotional, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I did cry. I wonder, though, if they really kept it limited, because that does kind of encourage, I feel like, what part of the message is, which is that, like, so much of what he was doing was kind of holding on to this singular memory and this singular chocolate bar that, like, was only for him. And we don't really, you know, and so we see her in the flashback, and then we don't really see her again until he opens up that memory and is sharing the chocolate with everyone else, like, and then we get to see her again. I think that's an interesting, like, tie-in of just, like, yeah, grief is, like, a very personal thing, but also, like, healing requires, like, the people around you, you know? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I do kind of like that they keep her in the background and like more of just like something that's brought up. But I do get what you're saying. I do feel like that's kind of a trend with a lot of the side plots in the movie as a whole, is we're getting just enough to have it like tantalizing, but not enough to where like it feels very filling, you know?
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I don't know. I think like you said, we see a lot of this trope of like using a dead parent to kind of as a motivation rather than as a character. And I sometimes just like want to know more about this character as a person and not so much as like a plot device.
Yeah, it's kind of like a child friendly spin on like the dead wife on a beach trope.
It is very similar in that sense. Extremely similar. Christopher Nolan would love this movie. He would love this movie, I'm just saying.
Oh, he would, because he loves his wife. He loves his wife so much.
He does. He does. That being said, I like the ending. Like I said, I got emotional. You said you cried the moment he opens the chocolate bar. Mm-hmm. But the moment she says to him, I know the secret that even those big people over on that plaza don't know.
Oh,
I was like,
yeah.
What is your secret? You have to share chocolate. And then he opens the fucking candy bar and it's like, the secret is you have to share it with
it's
people you
love. It's better when you share it with people. Yeah, I know. I was like wow. Oh, okay. They're really bludgeoning us with that one. Like,
I mean, like, it's a very important message and I like it. But like, the moment she said that to Willie on the boat, I was like, it's not going to be like an actual ingredient. Let's be honest with each other for a second. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I know like this movie is meant for children, so there's a little bit more handholding. Right. But I did laugh a little bit to myself when that ended up being the case.
I know. Let me ask you this, because I feel like I also was kind of like chuckling a little bit about like how like heavy-handed that was. Uh-huh. But I feel like to an extent, like the Paddington movies are kind of almost equally as like, let me hold your hand, like this is what we're saying, and it's very compassionate and loving.
You
and
think?
I feel like it is. Do you feel like it not? And I'm wondering if we feel that way because it's a cute little bear teaching us these messages instead of Timothée Chalamet. Is that what is happening?
I mean, it's very, very possible. It's possible. I feel like there's no explicit moment of like, I mean, I guess Paddington's like main like catchphrase is like, be kind to the world. Mm-hmm. What is his actual? It's a
We're fake fans. I know we're fake fans.
It's like be kind.
I'm Googling Paddington catchphrase.
It's not be kind. Rewind. It's like, be kind and the world be fine.
I think that's what it is.
Be kind and the world will be fine. I mean, that's like, are you double checking?
I am, but it's just pulling a billion Paddington quotes. And I'm like, none of these, it's just like, it's just going, look at these six beloved Paddington sayings. I'm like, no, I need the saying, but it's not giving me that.
Be kind and the world will be right. Really? That's really it?
Oh. It probably sounds better because he's a cute little like British bear.
I pull up quote and there's like, I'm not a criminal. I'm a bear.
I saw that one too. I was like, that's not the catchphrase.
Here we are. If we're kind and polite, the world will be right.
There we go. Yeah. Okay. I would argue that's just as heavy-handed as the secret to chocolate as you share it with people you love. Like, those are on the same level.
My defense for this will be this.
Okay.
There is no, like, setup for that. He just kind of says it all the time because he's Paddington. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, Paddington, what's your secret catchphrase? And he's I'm not going to tell you. I'll tell you at the end of this adventure. It's just kind of like his personality.
And throughout it's more the whole organic. Movie,
it's much more organic. It's kind of built into the character.
Okay,
and so it's less of like a like in your face about it, I think.
That makes sense. Okay, yeah, I get
that. But anyways, you know what I did like about the ending in Wonka is that I do love that the secret ingredient is written on a golden ticket. I thought that was very clever.
I was like, oh my God, that's so cute. And then I got emotional because I was like, oh my God, he's thinking of his mom when he does that.
I know. I thought that was extremely clever.
Yeah.
I do love that this movie doesn't make too many like homages, references, allusions.
Yeah.
Like I'm really happy there's no cameos, like no like hey audience, you know, we love this movie. Like I do like this movie is mostly contained.
I do too. I think that really works in its favor for sure.
Okay. Perfect. What doesn't work for you? Was there anything that like you thought was glaringly I'm not in love with this?
I think it's that this movie, out of any of the like Willy Wonka world stuff, this movie absolutely has like the highest stakes.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I mean, with the original, like the original adaptations, it's like the kids are put in objectively kind of dangerous situations, but it's also kind of like nothing's bad is actually going to happen to them, you know? And so it is different. Like, but with Wonka, it's like, you know, they're out of the factory. He's establishing himself. Like, they are like kind of in danger at different points, like property, a boat blows up, like things are happening.
I know the boat, like it's like they, really blows up, like they like a small explosion.
No, they like blew the boat up. And so there's stuff like that where, you know, the stakes are really high. And the point about where it started to make me laugh was kind of directly after that, like where Noodle is like told that like the people were paid to like lock her up more than before, and she gets thrown into the coop, and it's supposed to be this really like, oh my God, this is so bad, like what are we gonna do kind of moment, you know, where like things feel like, oh no, she's in huge trouble. And probably not even 45 seconds after we're given this like big stakes moment, she's rescued immediately. And I think that's my biggest problem, is that the film is trying to introduce these like very different, very high stakes moments, but they never like mean anything, because 30 seconds after they're told to us of like, oh my God, their life's in danger, it's okay again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like part of that is obviously because this is a family film. Like you can't get too into that.
Can't get too like, dark. Correct.
No.
Correct.
And so I do like, so on one hand, I appreciate how light this continues to be, even while trying to do some more like serious stuff. But at the same time, I'm like, I mean, narratively, it doesn't feel as satisfying because it's like they're in danger, but you're kind of just like, Wonka will be here in 10 seconds and it'll be fine.
Well said. Well said. I think the only time I feel like there's actual danger is in the chocolate vat, where they're being going to drown in the chocolate.
Yeah, and they really draw that out.
They do a good job drawing that portion out. But the moment where like Noodles is put in the coop, which I love, by the way, because Doll is famous for like these like famous little prisons for kids. The Trixie is a big one from Matilda. The coop in this. That was very on brand. I really like that. But like when Noodles is thrown in the coop, you're right. It's not even, I mean, I wish I could time it, but it's like 20 seconds she's in there and she hears a noise. It's like, oh, Wonka's here.
Yeah. He's like, hello. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh,
like,
we're good. We're saved.
Yeah.
And I do think that there would have been a little bit better if we could have savored that time. Like we don't even need to put them in danger, but let us sit with these emotions a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a more compelling, for some more compelling scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a movie that's, I think pretty funny at some point, I really like the bit with the chocolate that gets people drunk and they go through like the stages of being drunk.
Yes. And then it turns out that the girl that the zookeeper calls is the girl from the bank vault. And then she calls him and then they're just that was super funny. I liked that a lot.
I laughed so hard.
Yeah.
Like, what are the odds?
That was really funny.
That was very funny. And there's a lot of really funny moments like that. Like the beginning song where he's losing all of his doubloons. What do you call those money?
Silver?
Francs?
Silver?
Sovereigns? Sovereigns.
Sovereigns. Sovereigns.
Sovereigns.
Yeah.
Doubloons. where he's losing all his sovereigns. And like the little kid's like shining his shoes, and then he like looks down, and like the little kid's like doing something else. He has to pay him again. I thought that was very funny.
And then the little kid's like, "Can I brush your coat?" And he's like, "No." And he's like, "Can I do this?" And he's like, "Get away from me!" I laughed really hard at that. I was like, "That's so funny."
It's funny, and I'm disappointed because there's so much great humor like that.
Yeah.
And then you get like this really kind of out of place fat joke, which I don't.
Yeah.
Think really vibes well for this movie. It feels so like 90s coded. Like it almost forgets that, like, oh, you know, it's 2023, those jokes aren't really funny anymore.
Yeah.
And so every time we see the prison guard get like fatter, I'm just like, this is kind of dumb. I'm not like, I don't think it's very funny, and I think it's just dumb, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just such like poor humor, like
cheap.
Bad taste. It's cheap, yeah.
Cheap.
But it is like interesting because it's like, it's very Roald Dahl. Like Roald Dahl is big on like, my villains are fat people, they're ugly, you know, like they really lean into that. It's the same thing with like J.K. Rowling. She always, her villains are almost always
stereotypes.
Like, stereotype fat people. Like they don't like fat people for whatever reason, which is just like exhausting to deal with. So I agree, yeah. And it was so interesting because my theater was such a mixed bag of demographic. People laughed.
Oh, it's still gonna get laughs out of people. Yeah. That's never not gonna happen. People will still always laugh at like a character getting fatter and that kind of gimmick. I don't think it's very funny, if I'm being honest. I think it's a little disappointing that it had to resort to that kind of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because, like you said, you know, people associate like fat with villain, and it's like just, it's such a dated. It's, the word I'm looking for is dated. It's
yes.
a dated type of humor.
Yes.
But you're right, it's very on brand for Roald Dahl. I mean,
Reading
Willy Wonka is like, I'm not gonna say who the friend is, but I have a friend who has a son who's, you know, 5 or 6, and she read him Willy Wonka, and she said, like, when she read him Willy Wonka, she kind of had to redact some of the language because it's a little intense in terms of its descriptions of its, like, heavier characters. Like, Dahl is not holding back in that book. He is saying straight out, like, this person's fat and ugly, they're the bad person. And it's strange that this movie does evoke that kind of mentality, considering the book was written so long ago, but whatever.
I know, you'd wish times would have changed more than they have, unfortunately. It's just
I just think it's just cheap, stupid comedy. I was like, for a movie that's so clever with those, like, the sovereign moment and the drunk chocolate, I was just like shocked it went in that direction. That was all.
I was too. I agree.
Other than that, though, for things that didn't vibe with me, I talked about Chalamet's uneven performance. Some of the songs, like I said, Scrub Scrub, not a big fan of. Other songs I am a fan of. There's one song, I can't think of it. I don't know the words, but I know like the tune and the harmony of it. They play it during the credits. It's played in the movie, and they play it during the credits. They play it twice. And I really, really liked it. I don't know what song it is, but whatever song that is, I really enjoyed.
Oh.
But I think you did a really good job nailing the other parts on the head in terms of like the lack of danger or the unwillingness to let us sit with the danger. I guess I do want to kind of transition to why I really love the movie. Is that it does a good job building this world and giving us a lot of fun characters. Do you have a favorite?
Ooh.
And we're talking anybody from Olivia Colman's character all the way to the comedian who's not really a comedian or not very good at being a comedian. I like him. I thought he was funny.
He was fine.
No, he's funny. He's funny. There was a couple of jokes I didn't get at first. I was like, oh, he's funny. He's funny, funny.
That's the response of, oh, I didn't get that joke. He's funny. Like,
I thought there was a joke that I didn't like get at first, and then it hit me like 30 seconds after. I was like, oh, that's funny. I thought he was good. He could only talk underwater. Like, it's so stupid.
That was so ridiculous. I did like that. I'm trying to think. I think for me, the standouts are for sure Olivia Colman's character and then Noodle. I love Noodle. She's so sweet. Like,
Noodle's great.
I really enjoyed her in like entire performance, but also just like the vibe her character evokes, which is like she's a child, so she has these moments of like wonder, but she also like, I don't know, she really commands the people around her in like a really cool way, and like people clearly like respect her, which I like seeing that with like a young child on screen, where like the kid is respected as much as the adults. I'm like, that's great.
I agree. I want to ask you something though.
Okay.
What's the point of making her a Slugworth?
I don't know. I didn't really understand that part of things. I wonder if it's like they're trying to do a thing where like as Timothée Chalamet or as Wonka properly lets go of his mother, he helps Noodle find her mother. And like the two are kind of intermixed.
That's fine, but why should she be a Slugworth?
Yeah, also I don't know. I think it's probably just to make it clean and easy. Because it's a little bit of like, well, if it's Slugworth's niece, it's easier because we don't have to introduce a whole another character and explain it away. But it's also like, that's such a, it does feel like an afterthought in a way.
Or. Do you think they're trying to set up something for the future?
Oh. I mean, if anything that they're setting up, it's the way Olivia Colman's character and her, like, boyfriend, I don't know what their
lover.
Relationship
yeah what
their situationship like whatever they are, like the way they transform at the end of the movie seems to me that they're doing like a thing on the twits.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, and so I don't know if that's just like a fun little Easter egg or if that's like kind of what they're implying, is that it won't necessarily be like a sequel to Wonka, but it will be like we're doing more with Doll's work.
Oh, the Doll cinematic universe.
Yes. And I'm wondering if it's more along, because you know, in a way that you have a little more freedom if you go that route instead of a Wonka follow-up.
Oh my gosh, do you really think they're gonna do a twits? I think you probably reckon? More on the money than I am.
Okay,
but you, I also don't thinking... think, well, I think that this is a question I had for later, but I think we should talk about it now.
Okay.
The future of the Wonka, the Doll cinematic universe. If this movie does do well, I would not be surprised if they want to pick up Wonka again and kind of proceed with the story. But what direction do you go? I mean, what we know about Wonka is that he does have an intense rivalry with Slugworth and the other candy makers, confectionaries.
That's true. Yeah.
Is the next movie like following Slugworth and like following like her kind of rise to the candy world, and maybe like her like their fallout as a friendship? I don't know.
That honestly, I wouldn't be mad about that. I do think that'd be kind of interesting to see play out,
to see these two people who are friends at some point they do have a fallout, and that's kind of how it ends. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. I mean, who knows if they even will make a sequel,
right?
I'm looking at pictures of the twits and I'm like, oh my god, you're probably 1,000% right on the twist.
I think it's them. I think that's what we are getting. I don't know. If anything.
I haven't read the twits in over 2 decades, probably. It's been a long time.
Honestly, this is like a huge, like, I'm so smart moment, because I didn't even read the twits. I just remember the cover. And I was like, oh, that's the twits.
That's big brain of you, big time.
I know. We love a brain that won't let go of little details that don't actually matter.
That's really cool. Okay, I could see that happening. The Doll cinematic universe is something I would not be surprised if it happened. Mm-hmm. And them getting like Coleman and the actor who played the fake Bavarian lover. I could see it happening.
Yeah, I could too.
Okay, all right. Let me ask you this next question before we get to the end of this podcast.
Okay.
What's next for Timothée Chalamet? Or what do you want to see from Timothée Chalamet? We're at this point now. Chalamet is clearly a movie star, a superstar, but he's done nothing that's like really, how do I say this? I want to point out, I do respect him as an actor and I think he's very talented, but he hasn't done anything that's, I would say, super, super like grimy, down and dirty, challenging. He's always been kind of playing that young kid. That's what I'm trying to say. He's always been a young kid. He hasn't played like a man yet, an adult man.
Oh, because I was about to be like, wait, why? I feel like you're wrong because he's done, and I'm totally blanking on the name of it. It came out last year. I love it. What is that called?
Bones and All?
Yeah. I was like, that's so grimy.
It is grimy, but he's still playing like a young lover. Like he's a young. That's,
yeah, you're right.
Young, sexy, 20-year-old yes. lover romance. You yeah. know?
And it, I'm trying to think. The only other grimy thing would probably be The King, which he's playing really young in that again, too.
Really young in that, too. I mean, Call Me By Your Name, he's really young. And Don't Look Up, he's really young. And Dune, Beautiful he's boy. Like the young... Beautiful mm-hmm. boy, he's a son. Dune, he's like the young person who needs to step up because his father's been killed.
Right.
I wonder when he makes that transition. When does he become like the adult man? What role does he do?
I don't know. And that is a very interesting point to kind of look at with his work because like he really has made a name for himself in the roles he's played so far, but like you pointed out, like they are on the younger side, so it is interesting to kind of wonder how does he make that transition in a way that feels organic and also that kind of helps. I because it's not that I don't think he can't play those more mature roles by any means, but it's like there is a level of like convincing the audience that you're playing the age you're playing.
And exactly. So I mean, he's 27 mm-hmm. and he does have like this boyish charm to him, a boyish yeah. look to him, which is why he's been able to kind of pull off all these younger roles.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably can extend that for quite a little bit longer, too. I don't know. People age, obviously, so I don't know at what point he'll look a little bit older. But I'm wondering at what point does he work with a director that forces him to be like the adult man in a movie? He works with Gerwig a lot, yeah. but all the Gerwig roles have been very, like, he's the heartthrob, the young heartthrob.
Mm-hmm. This is so interesting because my brain's immediately going to Harris Dickinson.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they're the same age. He's 27 as well. But I feel like he has more organically made that transition into playing, like, slightly older roles.
Mm.
Like, he's not, like, playing, you know, like, 40s by any means. But he's definitely playing, like, late 20s at this point, I would argue. And like obviously that's his age, but I feel like he hits those really naturally. So I wonder if he needs to do something, or I wonder if Chalamet needs to do something like how Harris Dickinson did Scrapper, where he's playing like a young dad. And so he's still really young, but he gets to also take on a little bit more of that adult maturity. Role. Yeah. With like being a father.
Maybe this is a better way to kind of frame this question.
Okay.
Who does he need to work with to kind of make that jump to the next level? Or who do you want to see him work with?
I don't know. I always have such a hard time with stuff like this because I think great directors can still not get the best performances out of great actors. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I do think a lot of it comes down to chemistry and like whether the actors vibe with the way the directors work and vice versa. Like there's so many things that go into that that I do find really fascinating. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed, like Nolan takes a swing at him. I think there's plenty of stuff within Nolan that he could do maybe that would give him that extra like level of like I'm maturing just because of, you know, the stigma around Nolan's work. But that's also kind of like a boring answer, I feel like.
Okay. What about somebody like Michael Mann?
I've never seen a Michael Mann movie. So I
interesting.
I don't know. Do you like Michael Mann? You like his Michael movies? Mann. What are you thinking? Do you think that would feel good?
I think that would feel really good if I'm being honest.
Mm.
I think Michael Mann has this, it's so funny and ironic cuz his last name is Mann, but I do think a lot of his movies are like inherently have this like masculine vibe to them. You get a movie like Ferrari, you know, it's about Enzo Ferrari and Adam Driver's Enzo Ferrari. It's like this like titan, this big figure in the world of racing. And you get other movies like Thief, it's, you know, it's about this master thief. Heat is about these one heist member and the LAPD cop, and like you get these roles that are more inherently masculine in a way.
Gotcha.
That man is really good at kind of cultivating. Chalamet, I think, could really benefit from a director like Mann.
Mm.
I think it would be interesting to see Chalamet work with somebody like... I just had it in my brain. I would say Jordan Peele, but Peele...
I was literally just thinking that!
I think it would be cool. I mean, Peele's so talented with, you know, the actors he works with. I mean, and he's worked with so many different people. You know, Daniel Kaluuya he's done really well with, and Lupita Nyong'o, and Kiki Palmer. I don't know. I think it would be really cool to see Peele and Chalamet collaborate together.
Yeah, I wonder if that's what he needs, though, is to kind of venture into horror.
Does he need a Spielberg? Spielberg to kind of take him up a notch?
Mm, that
Scorsese?
Could be cool. Yeah. One of the greats.
Good work. I mean, just you know, one of maybe like someone who's a little bit more, yeah, one of the greats, one of the people who's been around. For, Ridley Scott, maybe?
Mm.
See him working with Scott? I don't know. Hmm. Right now, from what I understand, the next Chalamet role is a James Mangold movie, the Bob Dylan biopic, which is not going to come out for a while.
I forgot about that.
Which that should be an interesting kind of attempt at kind of a different type of movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw on Twitter that he's apparently going to be in like a ping pong movie of some sort, but that's all we know. We just know it's a ping pong movie.
Oh. Like Balls of Glory or whatever that's called? What is that?
Balls of Fury?
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm mixing it up. I mixed up Balls of Fury and Blades of Glory.
Glory?
Yeah, that's what just happened. Yeah.
I don't know if the ping pong movie is going to be is a comedy, but all I saw on the tweet is that Chalamet confirms one of his next movies is ping pong related. So I guess we'll find out. But that doesn't scream to me like the next mature role that he needs to take to go. Also, there's a lot of rumblings about him and the association with Gerwig, and Gerwig's next project, or one of her next projects, is the Narnia remakes and Narnia reboot. So there's a lot of discussion on who he might play.
Caspian?
No.
You don't
think? Someone else. No, there's someone else that people are like fan casting hard for him.
Aslan? The lion?
No. Think sillier, but sexier.
But sexier? The fawn?
The fawn.
That guy?
That guy. That is correct. That guy.
Oh my god. Mr. Thomas?
Mr. Thomas. Mr. Thomas.
With
James
his,
McAvoy, Mr. Thomas.
With a slutty no shirt but wear a scarf look.
The red scarf look.
Yeah.
You telling me you look at Mr. Thomas, you can't see Chalamet in that role?
I mean, if you make me, I can. I don't know if I'm naturally looking at Timothy Chalamet and being like, yes, you are Mr. Thomas. This is the role you were born to play.
You're not spending enough time on the fan fiction forums, I think.
Which is wild of you to say to me, of all people. But
I know,
you're right.
Anyways. Mm. But if that happens, I mean, he's 27. He's still so young.
Yeah,
he has a
yeah.
whole career in front of him. I'm just curious, at what point does he make that jump?
Yeah, I think that's always such a really interesting thing because, I mean, this goes into a bigger commentary where, like women get cast as older than they are the second mm-hmm. they kind of start to age, where it does seem like men can play really young for a long time before they're bumped up. So yeah, that is an interesting thing to kind of wonder about, is when does he make that transition, and is that like a clean cut transition, or is he going to be ping pong in between the two for a while before he really is in the adult roles?
Yeah, that's a really good question too. We'll have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. I just find it interesting that you look at like his peers, like someone like Jacob Elordi, who's a year younger than Chalamet, but has already taken a role in like Priscilla, where mm-hmm. it's a much more mature role than something mm-hmm. like that Chalamet is currently doing. Actually, I don't think Chalamet has had a Priscilla role yet, like that.
Ooh, yeah, I don't think so either. And I mean, maybe that's what Bob Dylan's going to end up being. Because I feel like maybe that's part of the helping of it, is if it's a role where like you're playing someone throughout like a long chunk of time. It's mm-hmm. not just like a year or whatever. It's like Elordi's playing Elvis through like a good
multiple
couple decades.
Years.
Yeah. Hmm.
Interesting. We can only speculate. We'll see what happens with the Bob Dylan movie. We'll see what happens with the Gerwig movie. We'll see what happens with this ping pong movie. But I do find it interesting because he's such a talented actor. It'll be really interesting to see where he goes next.
Yeah, it is really cool.
With next. So, anything else you want to say about Wonka? We talked about the good, the bad, the chocolate. Do you want to talk about anything else?
I want to ask you how you feel overall about like the found family aspect of this movie. Like, is that something that worked really well for you? Did you like the way it kind of came together? Like, how do you feel about that as a whole?
I thought it worked okay.
Okay.
If I'm being honest.
Okay.
I think it feels mostly underdeveloped. Mm-hmm. Like, I to be honest, I didn't really even see it as a found family movie until the ending, because he does spend time with this family underneath the hotel, but like he spends so much time away from them for like the first half of the movie, and it doesn't happen until maybe the last 20 minutes that they all start working together, and it feels like a found family movie. But I never really got the vibe that like this really worked super well as a found family movie.
Yeah,
does it for you?
No, and that's something I was like really wrestling with today when I was like thinking about the movie more, was that whole component of things. And I do wonder if it's because like so much of what draws them together in the first place in terms of their introduction, but then also what draws them together in their decision to kind of like unite more, it's all fueled by capitalism. Like it is unfortunately very motivated by like debt and the need to like alleviate that debt. And so like that element of things really kind of changes the way they work as a found family. Cause like, I mean, it is really interesting to watch the scene right before like Noodle finds out that she's about to be locked up forever, where like they're each having their debts paid off and they all just waltz out. Yeah. They waltz out in general. They don't, and it's very like one at a time. Like it's not like a, let me wait for my friends. Let's celebrate like the fact that we're free together. Like it feels very like, oh, I'm free. Bye. Like it.
Exactly. Yes.
So that was really interesting to see happen. Cause I do feel like there's a lot of moments where they are trying to really develop like an affection for this found family like element. Cause they're all such different characters and they're brought together and they're kind of doing their thing. Like that scene where they all are like talking through their own bedroom windows at each other feels very much like we're becoming a found family. Like we care about each other. We want to succeed. Like let's help each other kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying. But in terms of this movie feeling uneven, because it feels like there's so many moments in this movie where you get very strong pieces, like that moment where they all are talking at the window. Love that scene. They're kind of like throwing things back and forth and making plans. I really enjoy that moment because it does feel like a found family aspect being thoroughly explored. But then you do get that moment where they all get their debts paid off and they just all bounce, and like there's no communication between each other, and eventually obviously they all come back together to help Willy and Noodles. But it's weird because they like sacrifice the found family development for like this anti-capitalist message they're also trying to work on, which that is more prevalent throughout the film than the found family trope. I think it works better as like this anti-capitalist. No, maybe you disagree.
No, I do agree, but I think that's what bothers me almost more, that the found family thing kind of falls to the wayside, because I do firmly believe that like part of countering capitalism is forging like found family in your community. Like community action is necessary to dismantle systems like that. So I think that's where I start to feel more frustrated, is like the film is really speaking to those concepts of like, we have to like break away from these corporations and like the way they control, like the way people like operate and like the money they're given and et cetera, et cetera. But then also you have to do it alone to an extent. Obviously they help each other, but then the second they get what they want, it's like, okay, bye. I'm back to being just me, which is really interesting. And like, I don't know. I feel like if anything, I almost wish when Wonka takes Noodle to her mom, they were all there. And they all like,
oh,
saw
that would have felt
moment.
Better. Yeah.
That would have felt really good, I think.
Because you do get that moment where they share the chocolate with each other.
Yeah.
And, but then again, they share the chocolate and then they kind of go their separate ways again.
Yeah.
And it feels like that found family aspect once again falls apart in mm-hmm. favor of something else, which is kind of frustrating. I do like the, it feels very unwavering in its stance on like its anti-capitalist message, like the debts that are keeping people in prison in their own homes, forcing people to close their business down, the rich stay rich. I mean, one of my favorite quotes is the greedy always beat the needy.
Yeah.
And it seems like it sometimes it's a little on the nose, but I think it overall works really well for this movie.
For sure. Yeah. And I think maybe that's what it needs to be, like kind of in the same way where Barbie's messaging is a lot of like introducing the concepts of like feminism and like kind of like that like advocacy for one another. It's kind of the same thing in Wonka where it's more so an introduction to the ideas of like anti-capitalism and like
I think it needs to be more of an introduction. I mean, the movie is
I agree.
Audiences for kids. And I think that's
right.
I love that you brought up Barbie in that aspect of it, because there's some of the criticism the movie gets is that it's like surface level feminism. But
right.
I've seen people argue like, well, that's kind of the point. This movie is for young women to watch. And like, we can't just throw the depths of feminism at them immediately. We need to like give them this introductory course first. And like, that's a really cool way of looking at it. And I like to look at Wonka the same way.
I agree.
Oh, I like that.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad that just clicked in my brain like that. Cause I do agree. Like, I feel like that is almost always the missing block between like reaching the people who aren't on board with like certain mindsets like that. It's you're not meeting them at their level. And like, sometimes that means like toning down your language about these concepts and like really kind of going back to the basics, because sometimes you just need to have those basic conversations with people again. So I do. Yeah, that does work really well in that regard then, actually.
Cool.
Wonka.
Right. Wonka, baby. All right. We're wonked out.
We did
any
it.
Final words on Wonka before we come to a close?
Favorite
chocolate?
I was about to say, I don't know if I'd eat any of his chocolate.
Oh, I would eat all of it.
Really?
I mean, I love chocolate. I'm a borderline obsessed with chocolate. I would eat the hover chocolate.
Okay. Even though the bug crawls out of your butt?
Oh.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Hover chocolate.
Let's think about that.
No, let's not. That is genuine fear. What other chocolate? All the chocolate that the Oompa Loompa steals looks really good.
Those do look good. There's the silver lining chocolate he gives.
Oh,
Noodle.
That looks cool too. That I like that a lot.
I like the look of it. I don't think I'd eat it.
I'd eat it.
Would
you eat the candy that gets you drunk?
No, because I don't like being drunk.
Oh, I would definitely. I would definitely eat it.
I feel like if anything, it almost be like a nice excuse to get out of a party. Like you go to the pregame and I accidentally ate the drunk chocolate. Like I'm done.
Yeah. Buddy.
Oops.
And it puts you to sleep like in like a 2 minutes flat.
That is nice. That's really good.
It's really good.
Hmm.
Okay. We didn't talk about the Oompa Loompa. Hugh Laurie.
Oh, Hugh Laurie.
House MD as the Oompa Loompa.
Yeah, you want to know why? Because I almost wish he wasn't in the movie.
I don't think he provides anything for this movie at all.
The only thing he provides is a quick, easy way out of all the situations where they're like, we're about to kill someone, but we can't let them die. And then he's like, I'm here to save the day.
Yeah, like, they can't have a Wonka movie without an Oompa Loompa. I get it.
But he doesn't
play a big enough role to warrant in this movie. Like, he's just there for 2 hot seconds. He's there when he gets captured on the ship. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he's even on the ship. Like, why is he even there?
Because he's saying that he has to follow Wonka until Wonka repays his debt. So he's basically like, I'm coming with you no matter where you go because you still owe me chocolate.
And then he bounces.
Well, he bounces after they realize the ship's about to blow up. And then he's like, we got to get off the ship. And then I think he's like, you're going to jump off the ship too. Clearly, surely you're not going to stay on the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine. I think Hugh Grant, there's a lot of funny videos of him, like his interviews at junkets surfacing of him like not having the most excited attitude during these junkets and press interviews. And it kind of feels like it's translating to screen a little bit. I don't know how much he's like in love being an Oompa Loompa. And it kind of shows, if I'm being honest.
Well, I was going to ask you, though, do you feel like you are noticing that more specifically because of the junkets? Because I saw the junkets before I watched the movie. Uh-huh. So I definitely had that in my brain when he showed up. I was like, this is the role he's very vocally been like, I don't like this.
Maybe the junkets have tainted my view on the Oompa Loompa, and maybe okay. people who have not seen the junkets aren't noticing it or don't even notice it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very strong possibility, because those junkets are so fucking funny.
Yeah,
and so then
are.
I see him in the movie and he's like, I'm an Oompa Loompa. I'm like, oh, you're miserable.
Yeah. Oh, we're like, oh, you poor man. Like, you're such like a renowned actor, and they've got you like being this little guy who like
in
has
this mocap
nothing to do.
Suit that he
oh
hates and he doesn't
yeah.
like doing it.
Oh my god.
Have you seen the French video of like Timothée Chalamet and Hugh Grant in a French interview?
His French accent is so funny.
I just wow. feel like maybe if I hadn't seen the press junket, I would be a little bit more less noticing of his.
Yeah.
I don't know. Desire not to be there, but who knows?
I know. I'm always like, I'd like to think my ability to like look at a film critically doesn't get influenced that much. So I feel like I probably would have still been like, what's he doing there? But
I know.
You definitely, yeah, you do feel it more because he's talking about it.
all right. So at any rate, final score. Out of five,
ooh.
Did you review it?
I did. What did I give it? I already forget. You gave it a 3.5, right? Sorry, spoiler.
3.5.
I told you. I spoiled yours.
That's mine. Okay. You gave it a 3.5 as well. Spoiler
oh,
yours. There
look
you
at
go.
That. Perfect.
Working together.
We did it.
Yeah, so overall, we liked it. I still enjoyed
yeah.
it.
Totally.
I talked about how uneven it was, but still, like, even when it's uneven, I'm like having a good time. I'm laughing and smiling. I'm enjoying my time. So
yeah, I feel like we definitely had plenty to say weren't great points, but I do want to say that at the end of the day, of the two movies I watched that day, Wish and Wonka, I had infinitely more fun with Wonka, and I've since watching been thinking about Wonka way more.
Same
so, like,
here. Same here.
Yeah, like it was I genuinely had fun watching it, and like I feel like my audience as a whole for that had a lot of fun watching it.
Agree completely. You're mm-hmm. telling me you didn't enjoy the song "This Is the Thanks I Get" in Wish?
Which song is that?
This
I don't
is
even...
the thanks I get. It's when it goes like, I build you a bunch of houses
with the guy.
You don't have to pay me rent. Yeah, the villain.
Oh. Oh, they that's don't pay rent in Wish? That's
no,
nice.
No, they do. I just made up the lyrics.
Oh, I was like, damn. I didn't hold on to that at all.
Do you want to talk about how Peter Pan's in the movie and how...
And Wendy and the Seven Dwarves.
Seven Dwarves.
And
apparently,
the Fairy Godmother.
He becomes the magic mirror at the end. That's what they're implying.
Yeah, yeah.
I did not catch that, I'll be honest.
Oh, well, because there's this one part where they're doing the whole, that song where Asha meets up with her friends and they're kind of like doing their like, we're about to throw a rebellion. And it's like, kind of like, ooh, look at us. We're ready to rock. And like that song or whatever. And they're in that secret room uh-huh. and they're doing like a lot of like shadow work where he's like there as a shadow kind of. There's one part where they like pull a screen down or something and the smoke that's supposed to be him, it looks exactly like the
oh,
mirror. Yeah. And
okay,
that, yeah,
okay.
when that hit, I was like, no way. I was like, you're joking.
Silly movie, man. What a silly movie.
It's just a shame, you know? It's like, Easter eggs are fun, but like, you still have to make a film be able to stand on its own.
That's and, so sad that like, it seems like the most basic foundation, like Easter eggs can be fun in,
yeah,
you know, when they're used correctly. But like, if you're trying to make the whole movie Easter eggs,
yeah,
gotta focus on the narrative, man.
No, yeah. Speaking of like junket kind of stuff influencing the way you look at a film, I feel like I went into Wish already so sad because did you see like the concept art that came out for that?
Oh, I did with like the star guy.
The star was supposed, yeah, it was supposed to be like a guy, and Asha was gonna fall in love with him, and then the queen originally was also gonna be evil, so it was gonna be like an evil couple.
That's cool.
I know. I saw those, and I was like, I'm eating this up. This is what I want. And then that's not what
like,
we got.
No, we're gonna give you Talking Goat Zootopia references.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, wow, okay, like, great.
Amazing. All right, well, that's enough about Wish. Wonka, okay, we liked.
Thank you. Yeah, people, yeah, go the watch takeaway. Wonka. Takeaway is Wonka's worth seeing. Go see
Wonka's
it.
Wonka's worth seeing. Perfect. If you want to hear more on Wonka, but not the movie Wonka, but about Willy Wonka 1971, check out the Patreon. Yeah. Later this week, Claire and I will have an episode comparing the movie and the book and talking mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's about it for this. You can check out the Patreon for a lot of exclusive episodes. If you can't, don't worry. You can sign up for free, though. Mm-hmm. That is an option. Next week's episode will likely be on Claire's favorite superhero movie, Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Clara will not be the one talking about it with me, though. It'll probably be Sydney.
I like that you're saying probably, because there's no way in hell I'm going to see Aquaman. So you have to do it with Sydney.
This is true. Sydney is seeing it, and so it'll be Sydney. There is no chance Clara will be doing it.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
That's next week's episode. We appreciate you guys' time listening to this podcast. Thanks to you for reviewing and rating. We hope you have a good day, night, weekend, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.